We're continuing our reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 1. And this is Vasudev speaking. And why is Vasudev speaking? Vasudev is speaking because his wife, newly married to him, and he are coming home on a chariot, and Vasudev's brother-in-law, Kamsa, is driving the chariot to show affection to his sister. And there's many people following. It's a great festival with pomp and circumstance. And just as they're driving on the chariot midway, a voice comes from this guy, seemingly unembodied, and says, "Kamsa, you're a fool. The eighth child of your sister is going to kill you." It was the demigod speaking, because they wanted to hurry up the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And Kamsa, being the demoniac person that he was, stopped the chariot, grabbed his sister by the hair, and drew his sword. This is the scene on her wedding day, right up on the chariot. And he was going to behead her. And Vasudev cool-headedly began to dissuade him from killing Devaki. And he's taking many tacks. One is that he explains to him that if you do this, you'll lose your reputation, because you're never supposed to harm a woman. And that didn't seem to work. So he began explaining the atma-tattva, the philosophy of the soul, and saying that, you know, you're not your body. And whatever you do in this lifetime will affect what happens to you in your next lifetime, and you will have a next life, according to your activities in this life and your consciousness at the time of death, and by higher authority when you leave this body, you'll be transferred to another body, and you'll be accountable for any kind of sins that you commit in this lifetime, and therefore you should be very careful. So he's in the middle of explaining to Kamsa that the body's not what it seems to be. He says that the soul is actually steady and permanent. But just like when there are many pots of water with liquid in them, and there is a reflection of the moon, then when that liquid moves, it appears that the reflection of the moon is actually, that the moon is moving, but it's not actually. So similarly, the soul is steady and permanent, but when we identify with matter, then it appears that the soul is matter and that it's moving. But this is an illusion. This way, he's trying to appeal to Kamsa to give up this idea of killing Devaki. Tasmanna kayachidroham acharetsa tatavidaha atmana shimam anvichan drogdurvai parato bhayam. Therefore, since envious impious activities cause a body in which one suffers in this life, why should one act impiously? Considering one's welfare, one should not envy anyone, for an envious person must always fear harm from his enemies, either in this life or in the next. Purport. Instead of being inimical towards other living entities, one should act piously by engaging in the service of the Supreme Lord, thus avoiding a fearful situation both in this life and in the next. In this regard, the following moral instruction by the great politician Chanakya Pandit is very meaningful. Chajja Durjana Sangsargam Bajasadu Samagamam Kuru Punyam Ato Ratram Smaranityam Anityatam. One should give up the company of devils, demons, and non-devotees, and should always associate with devotees and saintly persons. One should always act piously, thinking that this life is temporary, and not be attached to temporary happiness and distress. The Krishna consciousness movement is teaching all of human society this principle of becoming Krishna conscious, and thus solving the problems of life forever. Tyakva deham punarjanma naitimam ipti sorjuna. Just by knowing Krishna, tyakva deham punarjanma, when we know Krishna's transcendental nature and his transcendental birth and his quality, transcendental qualities, then we don't take birth again in this material world. Tyakva deham punarjanma. Text 45. Esha tanuja bhala, esha tavanuja bhala, kripana putrakopama, hantum narhasi kalyanim, imam tvam dinavatsalaha. As your younger sister, this poor girl, Devaki, is like your own daughter and deserves to be affectionately maintained. You are merciful, and therefore you should not kill her. Indeed, she deserves your affection. Text 46. Shishuka uvacha evam sa samabhir bhedher bodhyamano pidarunaha nanya vartana kauravya purashadan anuvrataha. Shukadev Goswami continued, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Kamsa was fiercely cruel and was actually a follower of the Rakshasas. Therefore, he could be neither pacified nor terrified by the good instructions given by Vasudev. He did not care about the results of sinful activities, either in this life or in the next. 47. Nirbandam tasyatam gyadva vichintyana kadundubihi praptum kalam prativyodhum idam tatranu vapyadha idam tatran vapadyata. When Vasudev saw that Kamsa was determined to kill his sister Devaki, he thought to himself very deeply. Considering the imminent danger of death, he thought of another plan to stop Kamsa. Purport. Although Vasudev saw the imminent danger that his wife Devaki would be killed, he was convinced of his welfare because at his birth the demigods had played drums and kettle drums. He therefore attempted another way to save Devaki. 48. Mrityu bhuti mata pohyo yavad bhuti balodhayam yad yasau na nivarteta Naparado sti dehinaha. As long as he has intelligence and bodily strength, an intelligent person must try to avoid death. This is the duty of every embodied person. What is the duty of every embodied person? Try to avoid death. Everyone seems to be doing all right today. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. But if death cannot be avoided in spite of one's endeavors, a person facing death commits no offense. Purport. It is natural for a person facing untimely death to try his best to save himself. This is one's duty. Although death is sure, everyone should try to avoid it and not meet death without opposition, because every living soul is by nature eternal. Because death is a punishment imposed in the condemned life of material existence, the Vedic culture is based on avoiding death. Tekva deham punar janma naiti. Everyone should try to avoid death and rebirth by cultivating spiritual life, and should not submit to death without struggling to survive. One who is not trying to stop death is not an intelligent human being. Because Devaki was face to face with imminent death, it was Vasudev's duty to save her, as he was trying his best to do. He therefore considered another way to approach Kamsa so that Devaki would be saved. Any comments? Did that verse change your life? You were already trying to avoid death. So no change. Ayur harati vai pumsam udyanashtam chayanaso tasyarte yachano nitya nita utama shloka vartaya. We're being assaulted at every minute by the material nature. Our body's burning out. We're in the process of dying, actually. Along with birth, death is certain. It's going on. Your Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, you're one day old, you're one day dead, going towards death. It's at any time. We should try to avoid untimely death. It's a difficult thing, actually. I've spoken and to devotees who have before they've died, and also have been around their relatives and talked to them. I've been around relatives who have died. And, you know, you hear stories about someone getting some cancer or something and then fighting back and then surviving. And therefore, it is within everyone's mind that I'll beat this somehow. And that to understand when to give up and actually die is hard sometimes. Some people, up until the last minute, they're in denial. They're obviously dying. Their body's practically gone. And they're saying, just all I need is one more pill, and this doctor can give me this pill. So it's a difficult situation, because as Prabhupada said here, no one wants to give up death, and no one wants to give up their body. Even if there's an old decrepit body and you can barely walk, and he's like, how about if I kill you now? He's like, no, not now. We'll just kill you now. So the best policy is to prepare oneself assiduously during this lifetime. Could you look up the word assiduous, please? So one should prepare for death. Prabhupada said, a transcendentalist is one who thinks, I could die at any minute. Today, in fact. Were you thinking that today? That I could die today? And he said, a materialist is someone who thinks, I'll never die. Or if I do, it's so far in the future that I don't have to worry about it. Maybe when I'm old, and you know, that's about 5 million years away. So a transcendentalist is thinking about death. Assiduous?
Constant in application.
Oh, could we hear the microphone? We have this quadrant one mic, this is quadrant three mic, there should be a quadrant two mic in the back. There it is. We'll keep them situated there. Okay.
Assiduous means constant in application or attention, diligent. And it also means unceasing, persistent.
And where does it come from?
The Latin word is assiduous, or it's between assiduous and assidere. And that means to attend to. And ad means, the etymology is ad. If you take the etymology of assidere, from where it came, it can be broken into two words. Ad means near to, and sedere means to sit.
Sit near.
Yeah,
sit that near. Means like really make it a
constantly.
Study. It's almost like it's like Upanishad. Sit close. Assiduous means to sit up and really get into it, right? So we should assiduously prepare ourselves for death. That it could come in any minute. What are some of the ways that can be done according to the Shastra? To prepare yourself for death. Dainiti Prabhu.
Actually, I just wanted to say something else. Okay. I knew a devotee in New York many years ago, Prabhupada disciple. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
But he used to say every single day, he used to say, today or tomorrow I will die.
Hmm.
Today or tomorrow I will die. I thought about that a lot because it's true. Today or tomorrow I will surely die. If you say that every day, it's a fact. And if you're in that consciousness, you know, you'll be pretty serious.
I remember when I joined the Brahmacharya Ashram, and the first time I heard somebody ask, what time is it? Someone said, time of death. Why are you ready? Yeah. Preparation? What is the preparation? Be prepared to back up your answers with Shastra.
Hearing Krishna Katha.
Okay, give us some Praman, Shastra Praman. How does that prepare you for death? Any kind of Praman will take that's related to Shastra. Be innovative. couple go in here. Go ahead. If you got something, say it.
Shramatam Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtan Vidyantastoya Badrani Vidunoti Surakshatam.
And give us your explanation of why that is a preparation for death.
It doesn't say that.
But it's a preparation, right? Shrinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantakstohi Badrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. So you're saying by hearing about Krishna, you're purging your heart of all kinds of impure things, so that will help you get ready for death, right?
One way.
We'll take it. Okay, good. Rajendra? He's hot on the trail of something, I can tell.
No, we learned this shloka. Ayur Harati Vaipumsa Uddhyanastan Sainaso. That means but those who hear and chant the glories of the Lord, their duration of life is not decreased. So,
otherwise, sun's taking away one's life, right?
Every time the sun sets, those who are not hearing the glories of the Lord, their life gets reduced.
This is proof that Krishna Katha is ever fresh. We keep hearing the shloka this morning and we never tire of it. Very nice. Perfect. Praman, anything else? Preparation. Go ahead.
Antakale cha mamekam smaran mukta kalevaram yaprayati samadbhavo yati nashat samsayah.
Means?
At the time of death, whoever remembers me will come to me. So we should remember Krishna.
Okay.
There is no doubt on it. So Krishna is saying so.
Nice. You have something else?
Surrendering to Krishna. Mamu pete punarjanma dukhale mashashu naapnuvanti mahatmano samsiddhi paramagatim.
Now say it like you're a poet and you're standing out on the edge of a cliff saying it to a crowd of people. And use your arm like this.
Mamupete the Konteya Dukhalya Mashashutam Napnuanti Mahatmanam Samsindhi Parmam Gatim.
Give him a hand, come on. You should always recite the shlokas like that. Okay, go ahead. This is called pathos. You gotta have some pathos.
After approaching me, the great soul, they never returns back to this material world because they achieve the highest destination.
Nice. Mayapur Bihari's got something, a question. Quadrant one.
So Prabhuji, very basic question. How do I understand the word that Rajendra Prabhu said, that death is, you know, certain for everyone except for the devotees? So what is that context? Like, is it because a devotee, even if it doesn't achieve 100% in this life, it starts from the next? That's why it is said that death is not for him? Or under what context should I understand that? I mean, materially, when a devotee leaves the body, so under what context should I understand that?
Well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one who does good is never overcome by evil. So what you said originally about how one takes up where one leaves off, for somebody who's taking shelter of Krishna, then Krishna is protecting that person. And he, Krishna, explains to Arjuna that even if someone takes up the process and then doesn't make it all the way, then purva samskar, from his previous impressions, he again takes up the process in his next life and continues on. And Krishna reminds him of his advancement and makes all arrangements for him. So someone who does good is never overcome by evil. He's taken care of by Krishna. It's not that the body is going to be preserved. The body, one way or another, it'll go. And one shouldn't be surprised that the body goes, even of a devotee, that somehow or other the body, you know, gets taken away, because that's inevitable. But we can understand that the devotee is taken care of by Krishna, one who's who begins the process of devotional service, especially someone who prepares for it. Shraddha?
No, Prabhuji, I just went away for some duty. I lost the verses that were discussed here. The verses for the last
You have to minutes. Announce the verses.
Yeah.
So that she can write them down. She's keeping a catalog of all the verses today. Look at Bharat Maharaj as an example. Bharat Maharaj was focused on going back to Godhead, making his preparation. He was bathing three times a day and chanting his mantra to the Lord within the sun. And he had achieved some bhava. But then he became attached to a deer and his meditation was deviated. And when he died, he didn't think of Krishna, didn't think of Narayan, but he thought of the deer because he had transferred his emotion and everything to the deer. But because he had previously been so much engaged, Krishna made an arrangement that although he took birth as a deer, he remembered that he had been practicing in his last life. So that deer went to Pulastya Ashram, where he had previously practiced, and he took up his Ashtanga practice. So if you ever see a little deer doing Ashtanga yoga, you know what happened. Eating only leaves and taking bath several times a day. Yeah. You see in Vrindavan, there are many living entities, sometimes dogs and monkeys, that you look at them and they look at you and you go, okay, I understand. It's okay. We offer obeisances and go on. And so then in his next life, he took birth as Judd Bharat. Judd Bharat was a Brahmin, but he acted like a dead stone because now he understood that any kind of interaction with the material world can lead to havoc, and I can be distracted. So he pretended to be like an idiot. He pretended to be retarded. And his father dutifully trained him in all the Brahminical practices, but Judd Bharat would do the opposite. He'd teach him to take bath after passing stool, and he would take bath first and then pass stool. And then he would get his Brahmin thread all tangled and black, and he did everything in a way that dissuaded his father from trying to train him, because he didn't need training. He was already self-realized at that point. And so we can follow the progression in this context of devotees who have taken to the process of devotional service and then are protected by Krishna one life after the next. Vrijasura, who was Maharaj Chichaketu in his previous life, although he took birth in the body of a demon, Chichaketu had laughed at Lord Shiva, and he just laughed out loud, sort of. He thought it was amusing that Parvati was sitting on the lap of Shiva in front of all these people. And he just sort of laughed out loud as he was flying over in his airplane. And Parvati became upset. Shiva didn't mind, but Parvati said, you can laugh like this and you become a demon and take that body. And so, anyway, even though he took that birth, he was protected by Krishna. Narayanat Paraksarve Nakutashana Bibhiti Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apituliana Darshana. Wherever a devotee goes, he's unconcerned with the environment because Krishna is taking care of him. He'll direct him. And also, we've seen, even in this life, just practical, there have been essays and books written about people who have been either directly or indirectly connected with the Krishna consciousness movement. And there have been miraculous happenings at the time of their leaving their body. You know this thing, anyone who's even slightly interested in Krishna Katha, they become liberated. I saw it with my mother. She was a college professor and she was not particularly inclined to the idea of the absolute truth or God or Krishna consciousness or anything like that. But she liked me and supported me, and so did my father. when I was in the Krishna consciousness movement. And throughout her life, she remained fairly neutral as far as Krishna consciousness goes, but she wasn't that interested. But she was participating because I was her son and she had to. One way or another. I used to give her the BBT calendar every year with all those pictures. And in her office, I always saw that she had the BBT calendar because I gave it to her. But then near the end of her life, she died when she was over 90 years old. And I remember one time Nirkula was cooking and we were at her house and we were making some prasadam. And she came in and she was going to taste, you know, because people a lot of times when they're cooking, they taste. And we said, you can't, we have to offer it. And she said, but Krishna steals butter all the time. Because she had that picture. It had become her favorite picture of Krishna stealing butter. And I was astounded because I had no idea that, you know, she was aware of these things. Once when Nirkula and her went to get something at the store and they were looking for a parking space. It was around Christmas time. It was very crowded. And just as they got there, somebody pulled out so they could pull in. And she goes, thank Krishna. Little things, just little things like that. Not, you know, serious japa or sadhana or getting ready or something like that. 2 months before she passed away, she suddenly became Krishna conscious. Her husband, my father, had died a year ahead of that. And so they had been married 70 years. And she was, you know, melancholy. You don't stay married for 70 years and then when the partner dies, you just like, oh, everything's fine. There's a visceral connection practically. Anyway, it was a Christmas time and I went to her house to visit her for Christmas. I was there with my brother and I brought her japa beads and a bead bag. It was just an inspiration. She didn't show any indication for it except for the few things I told you. And I brought her a Hari Nam chatter and everything. And then when I came, it was time I was going to give her these gifts. I said, oh, here's what I brought you. I brought you this chatter. It's got the holy names of Krishna on it and these beads. And so I'm going to teach you how to chant. And so I was going to give her the beads. And my brother, who knew a little bit about Krishna consciousness, said, but don't you have to give her a name also? He took it very seriously. And then my mother started taking it seriously. Like, this is a big deal. So I said, okay. Your name's Jamuna Dasi. And it said, here's your beads. And I took a little film of the initiation. And so she took the beads and I taught her the Maha Mantra and she started chanting on her beads. And the next day she wrote a letter to Nirkula and me saying that, you know, my life has changed. Now I'm Jamuna Dasi. That was two months before she passed away. And since that day, she chanted. And she, when she was dying, about four or five days, I think it was a Monday, she said she was having problems walking because there was nothing particularly wrong except the doctor said it's what's called failure to thrive. It's like when your body just says, no mas, I give up. So she was becoming weak, she was falling, and actually once or twice when I went to her house to help her, right before I got there, she had fallen. I didn't know about it. When I walked in, she was stuck. You know, when people get old, they fall and they can't get up. So after that, I got her this emergency system so she could push the button and then neighbors would come over to save her. But I just happened to get there and she was on her back. She didn't know I'd come in the room. She was, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And I started to cry because I saw that she had taken the name. And then, you know, death was going on. She was falling. It was very difficult for her. And then she said, she told my brother, I'm not going to eat anymore. I quit. So she said, I'm going to stop eating and drinking. So it was on a Monday she said that. And then she passed away Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I think it was on a Friday morning at about 7:15 in the morning she left her body. But the circumstances were that she was, for those days, she was conscious all the way through because she was just fasting. And then Sangeeta, who started the hospice system and who's a hospice nurse, We flew her out from Philadelphia to help take care of my mom, because it's a very specific kind of care you give to somebody when they're passing away, when they're leaving their body. And we set her up. We put an altar above her head, you know, with my Shalagram Shilas were there. We had her favorite picture of Krishna with the butter thief was there. And then a lot of friends and relatives, everyone came to see her, and she was just sort of had an open court, and she was talking, but she was chanting. Nirkula would sleep in the same bed with her, and they'd wake up in the morning, and they'd chant together. And right before she left her body, the night before, I guess it was Thursday night, the last conscious words she said to Sangeeta and to Nirkula, she said, "I am Jamuna, Hare Krishna." And then she became unconscious. And then the next morning, when her breath became irregular, that I stayed up with her all night. And they said, call when her breath becomes irregular, because that means that it's, you know, a few minutes. So I was watching, just chanting. And then I saw her breath stopped. And then it started again. And I called everybody. Everyone came running in. And there was a tape of Prabhupada going, and we all started chanting. And I held the Shalagram Shila to her forehead. And I was chanting in one ear, Nirkula was chanting in the other ear. And Sangeeta was holding her up, you know, so that she didn't, like, have any uncomfortable thing of choking or anything like that. And then I just saw she left in that condition. And that was due to having some slight connection to Krishna consciousness, that arrangement was made. And I saw it for myself, the change in consciousness. I didn't do anything except for what I usually do. But she made the choice, and she transformed completely. I mean, she went from being an objective, she was a sociologist. And, she, you know, very kind of everything, whenever we talk about anything, it was in a relative way, not an absolute way, but she changed. I saw it in her, and I saw how she took the holy name. And, you know, her consciousness changed. And I saw it for myself, how some connection, you know, to Krishna consciousness. And Krishna takes care. You know, there's of course, the person has to agree. Somehow there has to be some kind of sukriti built up in the heart. You know, that's why your verse was nice. Punya Shravana Kirtana. You get that punya built up. And many, many devotees, there have been stories written about devotees who when... Just ordinary devotees who are, you know, not big world preachers or anything like that, just doing their sadhana quietly at home, housewife, chanting 16 rounds, and doing, you know, whatever simple service. And then near the time of death, talking to relatives and everything about, oh, yeah, Subal's here, and, you know, and really crossing over, having this experience of kind of seeing the spiritual world, experiencing it even before they leave. Shrutakirti's wife was speaking about this. There are many, many incidents. These are all recorded, you know, experiences for devotees. So just in a practical way, even within our Krishna conscious movement, not talking about Bharat Maharaj or others, those who are around the process and they see loved ones and God brothers, God sisters coming and going, they can see for themselves where the consciousness is and where it goes. That Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that those who have eyes of knowledge, jnana chakshusha, they can see what's happening. And those who don't, those who haven't studied the science and they have no idea, they don't know what's really going on. So we have to study the science, see it for ourselves, and understand the subtlety. And Prabhupada was explaining a few purports earlier to that we have to see how things come from subtle to gross. And he told us in this purport that we should see how we're creating our next body through our subtle consciousness. You can become aware of it, actually, how you're creating things through your subtle thoughts, because everything comes from subtle to gross, and so does the body. And whatever our consciousness is, as you gave the verse, antakale chamameva smaran mukva kalevaram, whatever you're remembering at the time of death, that's subtle, your remembrance. And wherever your bhava, your feeling is going, that will create your next circumstance in your next life, without a doubt. Krishna says it twice, without a doubt, without a doubt, without a doubt, this is what happens. All right? Dainini Prabhu.
I was just leafing through and I found a verse that I thought was pertinent, sort of.
It's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 25:278, page 315. Leelila amrita vine, kaya yari anya pane, tabe bhaktera durbala jivana, yara eka bindu pane, ut pulita tanumane, hase gaya karaye nartana. Men become strong and stout by eating sufficient grains, but the devotee who simply eats ordinary grains but does not taste the transcendental pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Krishna, gradually become weak and falls down from the transcendental position. However, if one drinks but a drop of the nectar of Krishna's pastimes, his body and mind begin to bloom, and he begins to laugh, sing, and dance.
What a great verse. What attracted you to that verse? Why did you bring it?
Well, it's Krishna's Janmashtami. We're hearing about Krishna's pastimes, and I just thought, a drop of this nectar can give you so much ecstasy.
Yeah, nice. Really nice. And also, it reminds me of preparation, because it's like when you take care of yourself, when you eat nutritious food, you're strong, and when you don't, you just fall apart. And similarly, as you're preparing to leave this world, when you're taking regular doses of Krishna consciousness, then you'll be prepared, hopefully. Srivas Prabhu?
Actually, in relation to Maya Prabhu's comment, what exactly is death for the soul is that for those who are in the material body, your complete identity is destroyed at the time of death and you take on a new identity. And this feeling of completely being lost is not applicable to devotee, as was saying in that verse, because life after life, you are in the same ecstatic position of hearing about Krishna, so that is never destroyed. So while the ordinary material man's or material living entity's life is being destroyed by the rising and setting of sun, for the devotee, it's eternal, and that's what we are reading in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also, because it's Amrita Sindhu, because means it's there is no question of death for the devotional service or the devotional activity of the soul. Thank you.
Thank you. Text 49 and 50, continuing the 10th canto, chapter 1, the advent of Lord Krishna. Pradaya mrityave putran mochaye kripanan imam sutame jari jayaran mrityuvana mriyeta ched viparya yova kim nasyad gatirdhatu duratyaya upastito nivarteta nivrita punir apatet. Vasudev considered, by delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth, or since he is already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Purport. Vasudev wanted to save the life of Devaki by promising to deliver his sons to Kamsa. In the future, he thought, Kamsa may die or I may not beget any sons. Even if a son is born and I deliver him to Kamsa, Kamsa may die at his hands, for by providence anything could happen. It is very difficult to understand how things are managed by providence. Thus Vasudev decided that he would promise to deliver his sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save Devaki from the imminent danger of death. 51. Agnir yata dharu vi yoga yoga yar adrishtato jnana nimitan asti evam nihi jantur api durvibhavya sharira sam yoga viyoga hetuhu. When a fire, for some unseen reason, leaps over one piece of wood and sets fire to the next, the reason is destiny. Similarly, when a living being accepts one kind of body and leaves aside another, there is no other reason than unseen destiny. Purport. When there is a fire in a village, the fire sometimes jumps over one house and burns another. Similarly, when there is a forest fire, the fire sometimes jumps over one tree and catches another. Why this happens, no one can say. One may set forth some imaginary reason why the nearest tree or house did not catch fire, whereas a tree or house in a distant place did, but actually the reason is destiny. This reason also applies to the transmigration of the soul, by which a prime minister in one life may become a dog in the next. The work of unseen destiny cannot be ascertained by practical experimental knowledge, and therefore one must be satisfied by reasoning that everything is done by Supreme Providence. 52. Evam mimrishyatam papam yavad atma nidarshanam pujayam ashavai sharir bahumana pura saram. After thus considering the matter as far as his knowledge would allow, Vasudev submitted his proposal to the sinful Kamsa with great respect. 53. Prasanna varanam bojo drishamsam nirapatrapam manasa duyamanina vihasan idama bravit. Vasudev's mind was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger. But in order to please the cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he externally smiled and spoke to him as follows. Purport. Sometimes one must act duplicitously in a dangerous position, as Vasudev did to save his wife. The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. Vasudev did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. This indicates that one may act duplicitously for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. According to the arrangement already foretold, Krishna was to appear through Vasudev and Devaki to kill Kamsa. Vasudev therefore had to do everything to save the situation. Although all the events were prearranged by Krishna, a devotee must try his best to serve the purpose of Krishna. Krishna himself is all-powerful, but it is not that a devotee should therefore sit idly and leave everything to him. This instruction is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Although Krishna was doing everything for Arjuna, Arjuna never sat down idly as a non-violent gentleman. He tried his best to fight the battle and be victorious. Do you find that an important purport? Yeah? It seems very important, doesn't it? It's instructive that sometimes one must act duplicitously in a dangerous condition. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is mentioned that a devotional service should be unmotivated and uninterrupted. Unmotivated means that a devotee doesn't ask Krishna for anything. However, the acharyas have said that in an emergency, if one asks Krishna to protect him or his loved ones in some kind of emergency situation, that's not outside the realm of pure devotional service because one acted in an emergency. It's not one's nature to ask something from Krishna for one's own personal benefit, but in an emergency, that's considered an external kind of aspect of one's personality because it's a temporary situation. So that's one aspect of this purport. One must do what one has to do in this material world because Prabhupada says here that it's complicated. It is complicated, isn't it? Or is it just me? It's complicated, right? There's a lot of complications. This is an interesting point. Look, Vijay is here. Let's acknowledge that he's arrived. He's our Smartbox, co-Smartbox director, who's leading us to victory on this Smartbox field of war. Thank you very much. Good to see you. That things are complicated, and we must make decisions. Decision-making is a big deal, and sometimes not making a decision is also making a decision. And therefore, we have to... gets made for you. You procrastinate, hesitate, and then you know you can see what's coming and you just don't do anything. Or you don't do anything and you know you don't know what's going to happen and others make up their mind. And it's difficult sometimes to make a decision because sometimes, as they say, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Either way, it looks hard, right? Whatever decision you make, it looks like it's going to be the wrong one. So there are many complicated situations. Look at when Arjuna captured Ashwatthama and brought him back, and he had vowed to kill him. And now Bhima said, do your duty as a Kshatriya and kill him. You have to appease Draupadi, and this guy's a rascal, and just do it. And then Draupadi changed her mind because she was soft-hearted, and she said, don't kill him. I don't want his mother to suffer the way I've suffered because of what he did to me. And there was this big argument. In fact, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna was there and he had to manifest two more arms to hold all the parties back from fighting with each other. And also, you'll notice in that pastime that Krishna didn't make the decision. He looked at Arjun and he said, okay, Arjun, now you have to decide what to do. You have both sides. One side is saying kill him. The other says don't kill him. How do you possibly harmonize those things? I mean, dead is dead and alive is alive, isn't it? But using his mature spiritual intelligence, he cut off the jewel from the hair of Ashwatthama. Socially, that killed him. Doesn't sound like a big deal maybe nowadays, but it was then. And it took away his stature as a Brahmin. And now he was killed socially, but he saved his body, so he did both in essence. That's a complicated maneuver. And how he figured it out the last minute was through maturity. So we also have to become mature in devotional service and in life in general to make strategic decisions. And these have to be made all the time. Should I go? Shouldn't I go? And the best way to decide, anukulyena krishnanu, anukulyasya sankalpa, we should have a sankalpa. And that means we decide ahead of time, our determination is that I will do whatever is most favorable. Pratikulyasya varjanam, and I'll avoid things which are unfavorable. These are two of the aspects of surrender to Krishna. You decide what's the most favorable for my service, what's the most unfavorable. For instance, you're trying to decide whether or not to move. If you move away from the temple, you'll make twice as much money in your job. But if you stay and you take the other job, you'll make half as much money, but you'll be next to the temple. According to our formula, which one would you do? Well, it's complicated because you could say, well, you know, I'll make more money and I'll give to Motel Gita and, you know, everything will be fine. I'll have Mangalarti at my house, right? What are you going to do?
Prabhuji, I had one doubt. Sometimes we act in duplicity for the sake of preventing complications.
Mm.
So, do we have reactions for that? Like we act duplicity because we want to avoid conflicts and to go on. But
it depends. If you're properly aligned and you're doing your duty for Krishna, first of all, we should take this instruction very sparingly. this instruction from this purport that we could act dupliciously for the sake of devotional service. We should take it as something that we do only in a case when there's no other recourse. Not that I adopt this as my primary way of living my life. It's an obvious point, but it's worth giving that preface. And then if you are acting by the order of Krishna or your spiritual master, you're acting in the line of duty, so to speak, to complete your service. And in order to complete that service, there's no other way but you have to act dupliciously. Or, you know, for the sake of avoiding some kind of conflict which might interrupt your service or something like that, you act dupliciously, then there's no reaction. And in the battle at Kurukshetra, when it was known that Dronacharya had become so ferocious that he would kill the Pandavas unless he was stopped. And Krishna knew the only way to stop him was if Dronacharya knew that his son had died, because that would be the only thing that would demoralize him enough to give up the battle because he was so attached. So then Krishna told Yudhishthira that you should announce that Ashwatthama has been killed. And he hesitated because he thought, well, that's not morally correct because Ashwatthama hasn't been killed. So I'm telling a lie, and I've never told a lie. In that case, he got a reaction. Mahabharata said he had to see hell for that. Some reaction was there because he didn't act dupliciously on behalf of Krishna. But that was Krishna directly saying, do it. And he hesitated to act dupliciously.
Did he still do it?
He did it, but they made some arrangement. They killed an elephant named Ashwatthama. And then he said, Ashwatthama's dead, the elephant. But still, main point is we should be properly aligned and understand what is our duty in Krishna consciousness. And if we're performing that duty, you know, If you're sent by your authority to get something done, you know, go make the, you know, go sign the new lease, and under that circumstance, and you know, you've been told it has to be like this, and you know, you make that. But your question was something else. It was really about if you're duplicitous because you want to avoid conflict in general, like in daily life.
Yes, dealing with the family members or friends in day-to-day life, not among devotees, but in people in general.
Again, it has to do with why you're doing it. Motive is important, and if you're avoiding conflict because you just want to get your work done and then come home and do your sadhana or something like that, or you don't.
Yes, just to avoid them. I mean.
Then that's okay. Because Shastra says that we shouldn't intimately associate with those who are not, who don't have our same devotional impetus. And so if for the sake of not intimately associating with people, you sort of just, yes, fine, you know, and you go along so that there's a path of least resistance, then that's a kind of duplicity so that you can avoid becoming implicated, and in which case it's not, there's no reaction for that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, because we should not mix. This is the order of Rupa Goswami and the nectar of instruction, right? Achahara prayashascha brajalpo niyamagraha janasangascha lalyamcha. We should give up janasanga, the general sangha of the world, people who aren't interested in Krishna consciousness. And if we have to, then we associate only in a superficial way. And if in the process of doing that, we seem duplicitous, like we don't meet every one of their demands, or you know, we avoid in certain ways, then that, no reaction. Okay, anything else? Yes.
Vasudev's duplicity. Was it, you know, my mind is always wandering, so I'm trying to bring it back here. Was it that he was saying that he would deliver the sons, but knowing his children to Kamsa, but in his mind he knew that he was going to try to save Devaki later? Was that his only duplicity?
No, he didn't know what would happen in the future. He said that maybe there would be sons, maybe there wouldn't be sons, maybe Kamsa wouldn't, you know. There's a lot of things that could have happened.
But what did he do that was duplicious?
Well, it wasn't necessarily duplicious, but he's making some, whatever arrangement he can at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Like he was smiling, but he was internally feeling very distressed. I think that's... says like he was full of anxiety because his wife was facing danger, but in order to please cruel, shameless, and sinful Kamsa, he was externally smiling.
Thank you. That's it. Yeah. Thank you. I'm going to read the purport again because it's an important purport. And you did Jainini? Did you give her your verse?
Yes, I gave it.
Okay. Sometimes one may act duplicitously in a dangerous position, as Vasudev did to save his wife. The material world is complicated, and to execute one's duties, one cannot avoid adopting such diplomacy. Vasudev did everything possible to save his wife for the sake of begetting Krishna. This indicates that one may act duplicitously for the purpose of saving Krishna and his interests. According to the arrangement already foretold, Krishna was to appear through Vasudev and Devaki to kill Kamsa. Vasudev, therefore, had to do everything to save the situation. Although all the events were prearranged by Krishna, a devotee must try his best to serve the purpose of Krishna. Krishna himself is all-powerful, but it is not that a devotee should therefore sit idly and leave everything to him. This instruction is also found in Bhagavad Gita. Although Krishna was doing everything for Arjuna, Arjuna never sat down idly as a non-violent gentleman. Rather, he tried his best to fight the battle and be victorious. So Prabhupada mentions this, that although Arjuna had seen the universal form, he knew that Krishna was performing everything, and then he didn't sit down and just smoke ganja, Prabhupada said. But he fought the war. He said, I'll sit, and Prabhupada repeated, he said, I'll sit down and smoke ganja and you fight. Krishna, you do the fight. But he actually engaged, you know, for the sake of Krishna's interests. Yes.
Just one more incident about the same. Sanatan Goswami, when he was put into prison, then he wanted to come out and go to meet Lord Chaitanya and Vrindavan, and he had to bribe the jailkeeper, and he has to tell the story and the whole thing. So it was like, law-wise, it was duplicitous, but it was for the service sake.
Yeah, he told him, he said, you know, you're a great scholar, and, you know, it's a jailkeeper, and I'm going to Mecca. And if you save a person going to Mecca, then you yourself will be liberated, and so on. Raghunath Das also did the same thing. He was actually, his parents were away from home, and they, somehow or other, they'd been skimming. They had some thing where they were taking extra money, and an official had grabbed Raghunath because the others weren't home, and they held him, and actually they were going to beat him, but every time they saw his face, he was so pure that they would hesitate and they didn't want to do it. And then he using diplomacy, he preached to the men, and he said same similar thing, you know. He said, you're a great wise scholar, and in fact you're like a living saint. And the man started crying, and tears were rolling down his beard and everything like that, and he spoke so sweetly to him. And then he said, okay, well, just, you know, tell your father that, you know, he should pay the money and we'll let you go. And and they let him go. But he had to use this kind of sweet language to talk, you know, to talk to this politician to appease him and get out of the situation. So even though one's a devotee, one may find oneself in a situation that's complicated, and you have to salvage it so that you can go on and do your service, and that you can make sure that it, you know, things are going to move forward. So you have to be a little intelligent and figure out what that is. Dikshit?
Can I say an example from Ramayana?
An example?
Yeah, I mean from Ramayana.
Oh, yes.
When Hanuman was flying to the mountain, from the middle of the ocean, a demon comes and it says, "I will swallow you." So Hanuman doesn't fight with it because he will waste the time. So he becomes small, goes inside that and comes out saying that, "You swallowed me, but I came out." So that's a way of avoiding the trouble, in a sense. And also when he goes there, sometimes he becomes small, sometimes he becomes big. And also he has to go to the chambers where the women are sleeping, and he has to see closely whether that is Sita or not. It's not doubting, but you know, it's under the surface. And he is a brahmachari, so that's like, sometimes he has to...
Complicated.
Complicated.
Here's your service, and there's the harem, and you know, what do you do now?
Even when he has to meet Rama and Lakshmi for the first time in that lifetime, he has to go in a form of a brahmana and then ask them, "Who are you?" So in fact that helped him, because when Ram said that, "I am your lord," then it was benefit for Hanuman in that way.
Interesting subject. So we're on duplicity, and we're going a long way on this. This is good. Okay, go ahead. The quadrant two is back there.
Prabhuji, it's like when we go out for Sankirtan, like, you know, we always does this. Like we met this Christian. "So you are the best." I told you, I remember you told one, "You are the best person in the world." So the Christians and Muslims, we talk nicely and to give the books. So like, I remember one more thing also, like when we go out.
But I just want to say, ad comment, but I really mean it, because I really feel that way, that what I say is it's people of faith like you that are keeping the world afloat. And I see that, you know, that they're not ordinary. Somebody who's, I mean, there are many different kinds of Christians and there are many different kinds of Muslims, but generally speaking, they're all very sincere. And so when I say it to them that, you know, it's people of faith like you that keep the world afloat, I actually really mean it from my heart. I just wanted to put that in there. Go ahead.
No, bro, I'm just saying, like, when we praise, like, so much, like, I met one guy, I said, "I went to Himalayas," and yeah, that's very good. And we just wantedly praise them to take the books. And one more thing I observed, like, when we go out for Sankirtan, we have 500 volunteers today. If you see, we are only 5 or 10. So it's not a duplicate, but this is like just like to get the, we are doing some good purpose.
That's true. We do say that. Dainini needs it.
Well, you know, the fact that he just brought that up is interesting, and I don't want to cause a controversy here, but I always thought that wasn't good. Anyway...
Because, what wasn't good?
To say that there's 500 of us going out, because it seems to me that it's...
But there are.
Across the world, there is. Okay.
We had 1,848 for the last marathon. So I underestimated by a little bit.
Well, I'm just thinking, I grew up in the I grew up in the collecting time where we said all sorts of things, you know, collecting for underprivileged children and so many things. And I think that was partly the downfall of some of the quote-unquote Sankirtan, was some of the things we used to say. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's not what I wanted to say. I wanted to say the pastime of Prabhupada acquiring Radha Landaneshwara. Mm. I don't know if that was duplicity exactly, some kind of transcendental trickery, but it was a pretty far-out story. I don't remember it exactly, but anyway, someone can read it in the Lilamrita. So that was sort of duplicitous.
You know the story? It was, the details won't come to me so clearly, but Prabhupada had acted in such a way that he assumed the sale. There's something in sales, it's called assuming the sale. It's like assuming that the person's going to buy, even if they haven't decided yet. You sort of like, okay, fine, that's good, we'll take it. You know, so the shopkeeper had this deity, and Prabhupada went in to see it, and he just assumed, his whole mood was, you know, we're taking him. And he sort of had the devotees carry the deity out, and the man was going, yeah, but.
Actually, it was Radharani, I think, had her finger was cracked or something, and Prabhupada, so that's why he was showing Prabhupada and asking Prabhupada about the deities, what do you think, you know, the Radharani's finger, and he wasn't really in the mood of possibly even selling, he was just sort of showing Prabhupada and asking, and then Prabhupada asked Tamal Krishna, you know, pick up Radharani, how heavy is she, and picks up Radharani, and can you carry her, yes, Prabhupada, sure, no problem, you know, and then he had Shamasundar, I think, pick up Krishna, and they just sort of, okay, you know, walked out, and like he said, you know, he's like, wait. Anyway, so.
Yes. You had another one. Okay.
We have this cow poster, Prabhu, like Ahimsa milk, so I just want to show you before we put there.
Oh.
Can I show up?
Sure. Did you offer it to Krishna already? Okay. Oh, it's beautiful. Dimitri did another poster. Harivol. Wow, I really like it. Save our cows, save our planet. Please donate for cows. Right over here. Keep coming. Here, right in front of me. Hare Krishna. I think Dimitri's working on it right now. Okay, so there's some diplomacy going on, and it's bona fide. Sri Vasudeva Vacha Nahyasyas Te Payam Somya Yidvai Saha Shariravak Putran samar payishyesya yataste payam utitam. Vasudev said, O best of the sober, you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki because of what you have heard from the unseen omen. The cause of death will be her sons. Therefore, I promise that when she gives birth to the sons from whom your fear has arisen, I shall deliver them all unto your hands. Purport. Kamsa feared Devaki's existence because after her eighth pregnancy, she would give birth to a son who would kill him. Vasudev, therefore, to assure his brother-in-law the utmost safety, promised to bring him all the sons. He would not wait for the eighth son, but from the very beginning would deliver to the hands of Kamsa all the sons to which Devaki would give birth. This was the most liberal proposition offered by Vasudev to Kamsa. Shishukuvacha swasur vatan nirvatre Kamsas tadvak yasaravit Vasudevo pitan prita prashasya pravishad griham. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, Kamsa agreed to the logical arguments of Vasudev, and having full faith in Vasudev's words, he refrained from killing his sister. Vasudev, being pleased with Kamsa, pacified him further and entered his own house. Purport. Although Kamsa was a sinful demon, he believed that Vasudev would never deviate from his word. The character of a pure devotee like Vasudev is such that even so great a demon as Kamsa firmly believed in his words and was satisfied. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchanar sarvar gunas tatra samasate suraha. All good attributes are present in a devotee, so much so that even Kamsa believed in Vasudev's words without a doubt. This is reminiscent of the statement by Srinivasacharya, Dhira Dhira Janapriyo Priyakaro, that the six Goswamis were adored by the gentle and the ruffians, the Dhira and the Adhira, because of their qualities. And that brings us to the prayers of the six Goswamis. which we're going to sing right now.